Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
You bet one bone to win 19. Where? What site do you use where you can actually bet $1?
They let you do 50-cent bets.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, literally, like, he dropped Superman down, like, the drain, comes out, like, God damn it, Superman. I don't know, honey. I don't know where he got that from.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City.
Part of the DITKOW Sports Network.
Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big, big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios as I turn my camera on over here in sunny Southern California, the home of the 2020 NBA champion Los Angeles Lakers. What a beautiful week it is to be a sports fan here in Southern California, and I'm really happy to be joined by all of our good friends here on the program tonight. We got Andy back with us. We got John back with us. We've got our friend Parcells following out, joining us as our guest picker tonight. A couple of notes before we start this program, though, and they begin with the following. We first look at what's happening in the basketball world. Yes, the Lakers won the championship over the weekend. Game 5 on Friday was an absolute thriller, but in this showdown between LeBron James and Jimmy Butler, it was Butler who turned out to be the better of the two, and the Heat survived to force a Game 6, which was on Sunday. In Game 6, the Lakers dominated the first half, and they pretty much didn't look back at that point, and they clinched the 2020 championship in the Orlando bubble. What an incredible win for the Lakers. I mean, I won't go into too much detail because I know we have a lot of stuff to cover tonight, but incredible. We also want to pass condolences to the Ford family. Whitey Ford died the day after we did our football pick show last week. And it's funny because Jim serendipitously, or just unintentionally, noted that when they were talking about getting Davey Garcia out of the game, and he said that, you know, it wasn't that big a deal, and it was like, it wasn't like they were trying to take Whitey Ford out, and just after that, he actually died. It was kind of sad to see that. Very big in the baseball community. Very sad death, obviously. Yankee fans certainly are most affected, and so are, you know, that's a bummer. On the MLB itself, wow. Dodgers, after going down 0-2 in the series, they are leading in the eighth inning 15-1. So with the win, they can step one step closer back in the series. In the ALCS, the Astros are on the brink. They are down 3-0 in the series, but they do have a lead in Game 4, 1-0 as we go into the third inning. We'll keep you apprised of anything that happens in this series the rest of the way. So everything on the table as far as football is concerned, too. We should have everybody here ready to go. And final note, the big story in college football, I mean football right now, is that Nick Saban tested positive for COVID-19. This just happened about an hour and a half ago. So this is a developing story. We'll keep you up to date on that as well. So everything on the table, including our contest, things are going pretty well for the crew. And we're ready to continue with our week six show. A lot to get into. A lot. It was a crazy week for college and pro. And we're ready to do this. So let's hit it. Oh, well, that's a high register. Let's hit it. Boy, I haven't hit that note in a while. Week 6, football picks. Here we go. Let's get a recap of what happened in last week's aspects of the contest. Another three-way tie for the best week in week number 5. Ron in New Jersey goes 2-1. Dave goes 2-1. John goes 2-1. All for 4 points apiece. And Andy right behind at 1-2 for the week at 2 points. The guest picks from our good friend Jim in New Jersey. I was bummed about this. I was hoping for good things for him, but he went 0-3 for no points. I'm so disappointed, but I know he's better. I know he'll do better the next time he's on here. So here are the standings after 5 weeks. It is Ron's hanging on to that first place lead at 20 points. I, Dave, in second place at 18 points. John is in third place at 14 points. Andy is in last place, but only 2 points behind John at 12 points. The guest picks so far in the season are 5-10 for 10 points. So it's interesting as we continue our show. There's a lot. There's so many crazy games to get into. And where do we begin? Well, we begin by introducing. Our panelists. So let's do that. Let's start by bringing John back to the show. John, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. Yeah, it's the COVID situation has made for some interesting scheduling. I mean, you had Tuesday night football last night. You got a Sun Belt game on tonight with college football that wasn't actually originally scheduled for a Wednesday. So, and then you have your normal schedule of games Thursday, Friday. So basically, you had a whole week this week with every single day had football on. So you can't complain with that. But overall, it was it was an interesting weekend, and can't wait to discuss it with everybody.
Oh yeah, there's a lot to discuss, and it's good to have you back. Thanks, John. Let's also bring Andy to the program. Andy, welcome. Andy, welcome back to the program. How's it going tonight?
Oh, good. Good to be back here. We're getting into the guts of fall. Postseason baseball on the TV. A lot of pigskin. A lot of shenanigans to get into.
Yeah, definitely. And Ron will be sending the picks via the text tonight, so he won't be on the air with us. But we have our guest picker, and you guys know him as Parcells Falling Out, and he joins us here on the program. Parcells, good to have you back on the program. How's it going tonight?
What's up, Dave? Everything's going well. Just hanging out, like Andy said, watching some baseball. Got a little soccer going also, but thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. I know the EPL is back, and we also have some stuff going on in the other international leagues. It's a good spot. Yeah, this is an exciting time of the year, without a doubt. And I think we would start our coverage of the American football by looking at what happened a week ago in the NFL. And you know, it will be. I mean, to be honest, it wasn't. It probably wasn't as a What happened here? Okay, there we go. It probably wasn't as manic as it was a week ago, but it was a really interesting week five because you had some significant upsets. And we can start with what happened in Kansas City. The Raiders went out there and they beat Kansas City outright, and they just humiliated the Kansas City defense. And it was really really interesting how that developed. So I think we'll go to John. And we will first start with you and give you the recap of last week's action. Certainly a lot to talk about. I mean, the injury to Dak as well, and it was eventful, certainly.
Yeah, let's start by mentioning what a sad day it was yesterday as Dan Quinn is fired from the Atlanta Falcons. So that means we can no longer fade him with our picks here on the program, unfortunately. Definitely a sad day. However, their interim coach, Raheem Morris, we remember him from being with the Bucs many years ago. I don't think things will be much better with Atlanta, but just getting rid of Quinn, I think the team might actually get a slight boost, maybe short term, but long term, you know, it's still just a dead team walking. I think we all had Carolina in that game. I mean, that's a heck of a catch by the Coastal Carolina receiver. Sorry, my eyes on this game here. We have a hypothetical wager on Carolina +7, but Carolina, the Panthers really dominated that game the other day. You know, the Falcons try to get back into it, and then Matt Ryan just throws a mind-numbing interception on the goal line when they were going in to tie the game at 20-13, and essentially sealed Dan Quinn's fate. And they'll try to, I don't know where they're going to go for the next coach. We'll let this other guy finish out the rest of the season. You mentioned the injury to Prescott, and that was just tough to watch. And Romo says, oh, it might be a cramp, Jim. Don't think it was a cramp, Tony. When they were showing the replay, like, you could literally see the bone, like, coming out of his skin through his jersey, through his, by where his foot was. That was just rough. But, you know, the Cowboys still found a way to win the game. You know, Andy Dalton's not exactly the – you know, someone who you want for your franchise quarterback right now. But I think in terms of being a backup quarterback, he's probably one of the better backups in the NFL. The only thing is now he's going to have to play, 12 games the rest of the season. So, you know, but in the NFC East, it probably really doesn't matter. You know, you go 7-9 there and, you know, you're going to win the division. Yeah, you mentioned the Raiders upset. I mean, they just took it to Kansas City with the Chiefs defense just continues to be just a complete sieve. And, we'll give credit to the Raiders. I mean, that was a great win on the road and not quite sure, you know, it'll be division race now between those guys heading down the rest of the season, at least for a few weeks now, with the Raiders getting that win. The Steelers-Eagles game was interesting. The Steelers got a last-second cover. I mean, the Eagles were in that the entire game, and there was just a long pass play that covered the game for Pittsburgh with, like, 3 minutes left. This guy from the Eagles, Travis Fulgham, I never heard of him. He had, like, 150 yards and a couple touchdowns. I mean, I think everyone's going to have him on their FanDuel team. From now on, I'll bet he'll be really cheap going forward. And then you had some juice in both of the Sunday night and Monday night games. I had the Vikings with the points, so they covered, but they really should have won that game. I mean, they dominated that game against the Seahawks, and now everyone's going to second-guess Zimmer going for that 4th-and-1. I mean, in my opinion, that was the complete right thing to do. If you look at the play again, there was a size of a hole like a truck could drive through, and the running back just completely missed it and just went straight up the middle where there was three defenders. If he had made one slight cut to the outside, it would have been a touchdown. It was kind of a shame for Minnesota that Dalvin Cook wasn't in. He wouldn't have made that mistake. Instead, Madison kind of runs into the line, and then they get stopped, and then Russ works his magic, and that's the end of the game. And the Seahawks pull another one out of the fire, and, 5-0, great win for them. And crushing loss for Minnesota. And then you had the Monday night game where the Chargers once again snatch victory away, with just some really, really poor play in the second half. And I just couldn't get anything going on offense after a hot start. And Herbert looked great. I mean, I don't know what he – at Oregon, I mean, I didn't expect him to be this kind of polished passer early on in his career. I guess – whatever offense they were running just didn't suit his skills or whatnot, but he was really impressive. And then he leads them down to take the lead late in the game, and obviously Breeze ties it, and then they can't respond after overtime. But I think the Chargers, every loss this year is about like a touchdown or less, and that's just kind of par for the course for them. So very tough loss for them, but I think we saw once again Drew Breeze it's getting to the end of the road for him. I mean, it's a bad interception. Obviously, he was able to keep it together long enough, but I think over the course of 16 games, it's just the Saints, it's just not going to be. And they're probably going to make the playoffs, but I just don't see them going anywhere if he's going to play like that. So those are kind of my quick rambling thoughts on stuff going on in the NFL. Like you said, Dave, wasn't any, not as much, I would say, drama as the previous week. I know the primetime games were really good, but overall, definitely enough storylines to keep us going to talk about for the show tonight.
Yeah, there were, and one note as far as the scheduled game on Monday between the Broncos and the Patriots, that got postponed further. So it was postponed to Monday, but then they moved it beyond that week, and I believe they'll be playing it next week. So we'll get into that a little bit later as we get into picks in our look at the week ahead. So let's go to Andy, and let's get your recap of last week's action.
Yeah, I watched far too much of that Dallas Giants game. Nance and Romo, I saw the injury. It was not one of those where you want to see it once, maybe twice, and never again. And Nance gets in total golf voice mode when he's concerned and there's an injury, because he's got three different voices: NFL Nance, March Madness Nance, and Golf Nance. And he shifted to Golf Nance when play came to a standstill and they had to address Dak's injury. But like John alluded to, with Dalton, I mean, 7-8 games is probably going to win the NFC East. So they'll forge forward, and we'll see what happens for the rest of the season. And watched far too much of that game. Watched all of that Bears Bucks game on Thursday, had a money line parlay go down the drain due to the Bears second half hijinks. It was a weird game. If you remember, Tampa kind of owned them in that first half. Arians went for it on 4th-and-1 from their own 19-yard line. I think at one point they were up 13-0, 14-0, something like that. And And there was that one sequence in the second half where basically Tampa had the Chicago 40-yard line, and then first and 10 turned to first and 30. And they did that basically two times in a row where their drives would stall right at the bare 40, 45-yard line, and it was haunting. Nick Foles has Tom's number. There's another sequence in the game where on third and long, Pastor Gronkowski set up fourth and short, and they were down one at the time or two at the time. Either way, I said they should have gone for it. They went for the field goal. Arians trusted his defense. Shouldn't have trusted his defense. And, yeah, just a surprising loss. But, again, Foles has Brady's number. Just one of those weird Thursday games. I love betting against Dan Quinn. Sometimes you bet on the Falcons, they burn you. But, yeah, we'll have to kind of find a new narrative with the Falcons in the next couple of weeks. Saints, like John said, ass clown. Team ass clown continues to be team ass clown. They got away with it this year because tie game now. That's like because the San Diego or the LA Chargers just continue to find new ways to reinvent the game, you know, losing. And sorry, Yachts, you're up by a ton of points in that game. You got to figure it out. And Herbert, self funhouse on Herbert. I didn't think he'd be at the level where he is now. He's obviously, who knows if he'll regress, but it seems like he's only going to get better. And he's making some really good throws. Went through a little lull that obviously cost them on Monday where they kind of stalled for about five drives in a row. But despite that 1-4 record, the future should be bright for LA. I don't know. They just need to figure it out somehow. Speaking of the Chargers, former quarterback for the Chargers, Phil Rivers, if you watch that Colts-Browns game, I think that should have been the Nance-Romo game, but obviously they took the Dallas Giants game. That was a entertaining game. You got the greatest hits of Phil Rivers between that safety, which he shouldn't, you know, he intentional grounding in the end zone, a check down pass that resulted in a pick six, and just the greatest hits of Phil Rivers being Phil Rivers. And obviously the Browns tried to get that game away, but not enough. Something's amiss with the Colts, but they got talent, but I don't know. Rivers might just be a little over the hill, not quite over the hill, but definitely well on that back nine. Couple more things here. Yeah. Seattle, Minnesota. Crazy game. Had the Laker-Seahawk money line game, money line parlay, hanging on the balance. We'll talk about the props later. But, yeah, like John said, like everyone said, the last thing you want, if you're a Seahawk fan, when you see them coming back out of the timeout and you see Minnesota line up for the fourth down, you're worried. You're totally worried. Like you actually wanted them to kick the field goal and go up eight because you guaranteed Wilson a chance with the ball. And to see them come out and go for it, like, oh, now we might not get the ball again. But they stopped them. Somehow they stopped them. I mean, my goodness gracious, Seattle looked so bad in the first half. I know Pete Carroll's got this mantra of, like, can't win the games quarters 1-3. You can win it in the fourth quarter. But it's going to catch up to them. These close games coming down the last possession, maybe it doesn't come up to catch up to them. But, I mean, you would think it's got to come catch up to them at some point. But would you rather the team, you know, come up like a – hot poo in the beginning of the game and end good? I guess so, because the other way around is like a team that starts off well and then goes, you know, Cardwell tight at the end. Seahawks, for whatever reason, just seem to be in the inverse of that. So they got to buy, and those have to figure it out. That defense is trash, but they got what Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf. My goodness gracious, he's got speed and he's got size and he's got big balls because he rose to the occasion, and that was just a great catch. I know the Viking cornerback was all around and, you know, overran the ball by 30 yards or whatever. That's still a great catch. So good win for the Seahawks. And that's about it in terms of the juice for last week.
Dave, you on mute?
Jeez, I am on mute again. I do this once a year. Oh, thanks for that. No, I was going to say that, yeah, Al Michaels tends to, seems like those NBC guys are always at the goal line at the end of every Seahawks game that they do. It's really funny. Like, they had the same thing with the Patriots a few weeks ago. So what an exciting finish to that game. Randy Arozarena hits a two-run home run to tie the game in the ALCS Game 4. Andy, we made a reference to that a few moments ago. And that has to be a bit of a buzzkill for the Astros, because it just seems like every time they get ahead, they just get tied. So we'll see if the Rays continue to rally from that or not. But we're in the fourth inning, and it's a tie game as we speak. So Parcells, I mean, you were certainly privy to that Giant game as well and the rest of the action. Let's get your recap of what happened last week in the NFL.
Well, I certainly can't match what John and Andy talked about, their knowledge, all those other games. What I can talk about is just week after week, what a mess New York football is. The Giants and Jets both being 0-5. But let's talk about the Giants and that disaster in Dallas. So they jump out to an early lead, right? Jones gets sacked. I think they're up 17-3. Jones gets sacked. Or no, you know what? I forget what the score was. But the biggest play in the first half, Jones gets sacked because Andrew Thomas, the number four pick, blows a block. And I think they go into halftime tied. Late in the game, Giants have a three-point lead. Dallas drives and ties it up. Giants get the ball back, first down, and then they can't do anything with it. Dallas makes some big plays, kick the field goals, and win. That's three games so far this year. Daniel Jones has had the ball in his hands to either win or tie the game, and he didn't come up. Granted, his second year, just played his 16th, 17th game, but at some point, you know, you have the ball in your hands late in the game to tie or to win. You got to do something with it. And he just isn't able to do that as of yet. Now, you know, just getting more specifically to the Giants and their faults that game. So they're controlling the game early, and then Dallas decides, as they probably should, start giving the ball to Dak. And Dallas's offensive line, three subs, three backups in this game, is blowing the Giants' defensive line 3-4 yards back off the line. Now, this is supposed to be the Giants' strength of their team. Everything Dave Gettleman focused on, he put big assets into defensive tackles. You know, he's got Williams and Hill and Tomlinson and Lawrence, and they're just getting blown off the line. So, you know, I'm not going to spend my time here. I do it enough, you know, starting at 9 a.m. every day, going off on Dave Gettleman. But it's just a mess with what he's done to this team. So, you know, as a Giants fan, that's in the past, that game would have you throwing shit the whole time. At the end of the game, you'd be pacing. You'd just be furious. But at this point, everything that they're going through, you're just kind of indifferent to it. You just put your hands up, and it's like what you expect. You know, just another nonsense loss from a team that's just poorly constructed.
Yeah, it's a rough season. And it's like, these are games that you can win. They're actually winnable games. I mean, they're right there. They're right there against the Rams, too, as you mentioned. And it's just, it's frustrating, I can imagine, to be in that position. And similarly for the Jets, they just seem to lack compete in a lot of these games, except for the one that they were, you know, going toe-to-toe with Denver, which just made no sense. Like, every game that they had this year was under 40 points, except that one, which had, like, 65, which is just insane. But I did want to ask you guys about Le'Veon Bell. Two things. Number one, was that, I mean, obviously it was a clown move that the Jets would give up on him so soon. But who would get him at this point, and do you think he has anything left? And I think I'll go back to you, Parcells, to start us off in that topic. I mean, to give up on a guy like that so soon, I mean, this is just a proof positive that Adam Gase doesn't know what he's doing. But let me get your thoughts on Bell.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, would they pay him $28 million for 16 or 17 games? That's insane. But whether he has anything left, I mean, he may have something. I don't think he's the same player he was 3-4 years ago after taking that that year off. Who could use him? I would suppose a contender. I don't know why a team not going anywhere would pick him up. You know, there were some things thrown around on social media today about the Patriots. Forget who else they said. I don't know if he has anything left. He certainly didn't show much with the Jets. So yeah. I don't know how much of a chance I would take on him.
I heard the Bears, too, on Twitter. So, John, did you want to tackle that a bit? I mean, what's your feeling there with Bell?
I think I saw something earlier that the Chiefs are close to signing him. So we'll see if that's – that was a rumor that I just saw. So we'll see if that's true. But I don't know. Like, he's just been so – you know, he's absolutely right when you say that year away really hurt him. I mean, he clearly came back, like, not in good football shape to play. Like, after you miss a year of – like physical contact and just you're not game ready. It just takes a while to get back to that level that he was with the Steelers. So, you know, you have that plus just being completely epically mismanaged by Adam Gase and the Jets coaching staff. It's just a bad situation all around. I mean, I think he could be a good rotational player for the Chiefs if that's where he ends up going. I think that probably would be a smart move. So I'm not going to say he's done completely, but like he's not, I mean, he used to get like, what, 25 carries a game, or between carries and receptions, he'd get like 30 touches a game. I mean, that's not happening anymore. But, you know, I think he could be a decent piece. And I guess it just goes to show you again, just like with Adam Gase in Miami, like with the Jets, he's literally running every single good player that they have off the team, which just is just, you know, why take the odds on him being the next coach fired if you can get it. I don't know how long, much longer that guy's going to last.
That's a great point. I'm actually surprised he's still coaching. I literally can't believe he's still coaching that team right now. Andy, I'll give it to you for any other thoughts as far as that situation.
Yeah, like the other two said, it's like the truth is probably in the middle, right? Or like he could be washed up, or it just follows the pattern of really good players on the Jets wanting nothing to do with the Jet. But I would lean that way because with – you know, even though running backs are still – they're so unpredictable year to year. You never know when they're just going to lose it. But I remember when the Seahawks first got Marshawn Lynch, and I'm pretty sure, like, when the Bills traded him, he was already, like, considered backup to Fred Jackson. And it's not like when the Seahawks got Marshawn Lynch, they're – thinking they were getting Marshawn Lynch in his prime, they were like, well, our backfield just got a little crowded, but let's see who steps up. And then, as we all know, Lynch went on to have a bunch of 1,000-yard seasons and was king for Seattle. So you never know. Let's see where – we know Bell's got proven success with the Steelers, and I actually don't remember what he's done with the Jets, to be honest, because they're so offensively challenged, but – yeah, a team like the Chiefs getting him, that'd be a fit. That's a tailor-made fit. So, yeah, I think it would be a positive for anyone getting Bell.
I'm going to be very interested in this. I mean, I have a unique perspective on Bell's career being a Steeler fan and seeing that whole fiasco a couple years ago. It's just tough to take an entire year off and expect to maintain a great run of success, especially when you're a running back, and a running back's career usually falls off a lot by the time you get to age 27. So once you get to like 28 or 29, very few people can still be productive in the NFL. One of those people is Frank Gore, who's going to take over for running back on the Jets. So I'm going to keep an eye on him this weekend too. So let's get on to the picks. We still have a lot to cover here on this program. So let's get to it. We'll begin with Ron's picks for week number 6 in the NFL. He sends them to us via the text. And we will start with the Jets game, believe it or not. We're going to go with Ron selecting Dolphins giving 10 at home against the Jets. I read a note today that this is the first time that the Dolphins have been a gambling favorite in a game against the Jets in a long time. So That's a very bold situation on the part of the books. We'll see if they come through for Ron in New Jersey. Game number two for Ron. He selects the Jaguars getting 3.5 at home against the Lions. We have a couple of home underdogs this weekend, and that's one of them. So once again, Jaguars plus 3.5 for Ron in New Jersey to go with Dolphins minus 10. And next up, we have me. So here are the Dave picks for week 6 in the NFL. It was a really weird week. I did okay. I did pretty well in the John Pick'em. I think it went 3-4, so it was all right. And then the podcast picks were good. But it was a bit of a mess everywhere else. So we're going to try to be a little more consistent with these selections. And so we're going to go with two proven commodities for week number 6. We'll start in the Steel City, where the Three Rivers meet. And we're going to go take the Steelers at home, giving 3.5 against the Cleveland Browns. The Browns are certainly a good team, but I think people are a little bit too high on them after a couple of wins against mediocre, if we're being generous, mediocre teams. It started with that big win against Dallas on the road. Again, I don't know why they were, like, people considered them to be, like, unable to win that game. I just thought that they were a very live dog to win that game outright, and they certainly did. Second game, they went out and they pretty much shut down the Colts. I think it really said more about the Colts than the Browns, but give them credit. The Browns were in control the whole way. This time, you got a rivalry game. The point spread isn't that big. I think normally you'd probably give the Steelers maybe like 3, but they... No, I'm sorry. You'd give them... Maybe you give this... Yeah, that's right. You give the Steelers like maybe 4 or 5, but I think the Browns have taken that down to close to 3. So I'm going to take the value on that. We're going to go Steelers giving 3.5. I know that their defense isn't always on all the time, but they can get out of... they can rush with the best of them. You get to see Bud Dupree and company going after Baker Mayfield. I mean, I'm not even... I should check and double-check that he's actually starting the game. I think he is. But let's not get into that. But point is... I like the Steelers here, so we'll take the homer pick for game number one. Game number two, we are going to go to Monday late afternoon football, and this is another case of a team getting a little bit too inflated of a point spread. In this case, it's the Bills coming off a pretty bad loss. Not pretty bad loss. That's a Ernie Johnson thing. They're coming off a horrible loss against the Tennessee Titans, and yet they are only a 3-point underdog. Granted, at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. With the defense that bad, I can't imagine them keeping up with Kansas City. So I'm going to go take the road team in this one. Kansas City minus 3 to go with Steelers minus 3.5 for week 6. Okay, so now let's go to John. And John, we're ready for your NFL picks.
All right, Dave. I was all ready to go on here and take... The Panthers are like my team now. This has been the fourth week in a row I've taken them. But the line was 3 this morning, and now it's minus 1.5. And that's just kind of a little – I don't know. I'm going to stay away from there on the show. Maybe I'll do that for my own picks off the program and for my league, but I think I'm going to stay away. But that was in consideration. So instead, I'm going to take Denver plus 10 for my first pick in New England. I don't know. I can't quite get a read on this New England team. You know, we've talked about how well Cam Newton has played, and obviously Belichick is going to be there with, you know, putting together a great defensive game plan each week. But I just don't know if they're the kind of team that you want to be laying 10 points with right now. You know, I did see that Cam Newton's going to be back in this game, most likely. So that's definitely a positive on their side, and even though their defense is good. But the Denver defense is pretty good, too. I mean, that's the one good thing about their team is their defense is fairly solid. Drew Locke might be back for this game. If Brett Rypien starts, I'm pretty much screwed with this bet. But I'm counting that Locke is going to play, and I think the Denver defense is good enough to kind of keep them in the game. Kind of like the game that they played against the Steelers, I want to say, in week 2 or 3, where they just kind of hung around and, you know, and lost by, I think, 6 points or 7 points. It's, 10 is just a lot, I think, for this Patriots team that we really still quite don't know a lot about. So give me Denver plus 10 for the first game. And then for my second pick, I'm going to keep dying on this hill of fading Cliff Kingsbury as a favorite on the road. And I don't care. I I did take the Jets last week. I was a man of my word. I took them in our pool, and I lost. But guess what? We're going to get back on this horse, and I'm going to take Dallas plus two on Monday night against the Cardinals. Like I mentioned earlier, I think Dalton definitely is a bit of a downgrade from Dak in terms of, obviously, mobility. Like, he can't really run those read option plays like he can, you know, with Elliott, like Dak can, obviously. But he's still a pretty good passer. You know, you got all sorts of weapons around him. I don't think this Cardinals team is still very good. I even think McCarthy might have a coaching edge in this game against Kingsbury. You know, I'm not going to read into anything that the Cardinals did against the Jets. That game was even – that was 17-10, like, midway through the third quarter. I mean, the Jets were kind of in the game, and then it just got a little bit away from them at the end. So, again, I'm just going to continue to fade Kingsbury as a road favorite. I think Dallas will be maybe the kind of the theory – see this in the NBA a lot, when, like, you lose a star player and, like, the line just shoots up the next night, and the players kind of rally for a star player kind of thing. And you might see that here again. The Dallas players might be really motivated to win this game for Prescott. I know you hate to base your picks off of, like, stuff like that, but I really think it could be a factor. So give me Dallas plus two for my second pick, and then Denver plus 10 was the first pick for week 6 in the NFL.
Thank you, John. I'm looking forward to that game. I think the offense does. I agree with you as far as the offense and the Cowboys. I think they can, you know, they can come pretty close to the same level of production because they've got a lot of talent around Dalton. I mean, three quality receivers. I'll get more into that when we get into the week ahead. But first, let's go back to Andy in Seattle, and let's get your week 6 picks.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Week 6. Yeah, I am going to take Carolina, giving a point and a half versus the Bears. I didn't know it was 3, so obviously more money must be coming in on the Bears. But like John said, we like Matt Rhule. We like taking Carolina. We like taking Teddy Bridgewater, whether he was, you know, playing at Louisville in college, Minnesota Vikings, Saints when he was filling in for Drew Brees. All he does is seem to cover. They look pretty good last week against Atlanta. They definitely had full control of the game in the third quarter. Rhule got a little tight. He elected to punt from the Falcon, you know, 40-yard line, David Shaw style, a touchback. So all that, you know, rather than go for it 4th and 6, you're going to just punt for a net of, you know, 20 yards. I hate when that happens, but they got away with it because Matt Ryan happened to throw a classic Matt Ryan pick in the end zone. I think besides that, you know, they did anything they really wanted to against the Falcons. We all know we have our gripes with the Bears. They're offensively challenged. You know, Foles roasted occasion last week, but you know, I think the Panthers are a little better, and that's, you know, maybe 1.5 points better than the Bears. So give me the Panthers for game number 1. And then game number 2, I was kind of hemming and hawing, but I'm going to take the 49ers getting 3 at home against the Rams. Now, I actually did look at the opening line at this one, and the opening line was Rams. Rams were getting 3, and now they're giving 3. So I don't know. Maybe this is an overreaction because of the egg the Niners laid against Miami, and the week before they looked very uninspired in a win against the Giants, and some of the guys that they got back from injury, such as Garoppolo, didn't look all that good last week. And all that to say, I think this is, anytime you can get the 49ers getting points at home, like, why not take it? I'd rather lose that way. The Rams kind of feels a little trappy, so I'll take the Niners. Well, maybe we'll get a – I don't think we'll get a repeat of that game that was around Christmas time last year when it was like no one could stop anybody and it was like 33-30, some final score like that. I think you'll see a lot more ball control. And obviously there's probably a little rivalry between – McVay and the Shanahan, you know, see who's the smartest young coach in the room. I like Shanahan more than McVay. So, yeah, this is definitely like a subjective pick. Betting with my heart. Give me the 49ers. getting three. Because they also need this game. This is a big game for the whole NFC West implication. The Niners already have two losses, so they definitely they want this game. Because, it's competition's fierce in that division. So give me the 49ers getting three and Carolina giving 1.5 a week six NFL.
Thanks, Andy. It is no question that the NFC West is the most complete division in the game right now. And so much so that Sunday Night Football thought enough of it to go there a lot in the early going. And I don't have a complaint about it at all. Pretty good stuff. So let's go to the guest picks. And to present them, we have our friend Parcells Falling Out. Parcells, it's all yours when you're ready.
All right, Dave. All right, so after bashing them for a few minutes earlier, destroying them, I'm going to put on my Paul DeTino hat here. And I'm going to take the Giants -3 over the Redskins. They got to win a game. I'm not going to be able to break down the X's and O's. What I will say is, though, is that they have made some progress. Jason Garrett is still trying to figure out what he has with this offense. They had two touchdowns called back last week. Granted, one of them was on a fake field goal. But, as DeTino says, they're 0-1 right now because the first four games don't count, right? Because those are exhibition games. So they're playing the Redskins. They're gonna have to win at some point. So I'm going to go the Giants -3 for my first pick. My second pick, I'm going to go the opposite of John. But I didn't see 10 for this game. I saw 8.5. So 10 might change my feeling on this. But I was going to go Patriots -8.5 as I saw. With Newton coming back, Gilmore coming back. I think Locke probably is coming back. But I don't know about this Patriots team. They scored some points a few weeks ago. Yeah, Denver's defense is pretty good. But it still has the feeling of a Patriots team to me, even though the quarterback is different. It seems that they're really focusing this game plan on Newton's strengths and him running the ball. And I think 8.5, if it is 8.5, I think that's something they could pull off. So I'm going to go Giants -3, Patriots -8.5. If you need another pick, if it's not 8.5, I'll get you one. But that's my week six picks.
I mean, the consensus seems to be 10 at the moment. It was 9.5 at one point. Would you? We could go an alternate if you feel if you don't feel that most confident about it. It's up to you.
Stick with it.
Well, in that case, good luck, Parcells. And on we go. We're gonna go ahead and take a look at the schedule ahead in the NFL. We have some good featured games this week. You can see that. Whereas we had a more uneven one last week. You're looking at some pretty nice showcases, and I think Browns and Steelers qualifies. I think this is going to be a very great revival of the rivalry. And one other guy that you want to take a look at, Chase Claypool, the new receiver that the Steelers have. He went for 4 touchdowns last week in a game in which, as everybody was talking about, went back and forth with Philadelphia. And it was I felt like Jim got a raw deal in that one because they were covering that game, the Eagles, until the very, very end. So it was actually a much closer game than the final score indicated. Next up, John's going to love this one, Packers versus Bucks. I don't think that's CBS. I think that's Fox. That's my fault. Then you got the Rams 49ers on NBC, Chiefs Bills, which will have the Fox crew, but that's on Monday afternoon for us who are here in the West. It's Monday evening-ish for the people in the East. And then lastly, Cardinals versus Cowboys as the final of the featured games. It may not seem that way because, the Cowboys took a while just to get a win. I'm going to qualify it because this could be a very, very exciting game, and you're going to have a lot of points. So let's go to the panel, and let's get your thoughts on this week's action. And we can start with John.
Yeah, it should be – looks like a good schedule of games. The one thing that the whole COVID pandemic has shown is just – you know, the NFL, those play whenever they want, whatever time they want. I mean, we'll watch. I mean, obviously it's easier to reschedule this, these kind of games when there's no fans in attendance, but man, sign me up next year for like double headers on Monday Night Football, Tuesday Night Football, like whenever it's on, like just, you know, more windows, the better. Like I'm psyched for this on Monday, this double header that they're going to put on. And obviously they needed to have keep Fox with the, like the exclusive coverage. So it didn't overlap. Like when you had the Monday, the two games, the Chiefs and the Raiders, and then it was the Packers and Falcons a couple weeks ago, they didn't overlap it because obviously it was just, they just took it from the Sunday CBS slate. So that's going to be great. You know, for us East Coast folk, you know, getting home just after five and throwing on the Chiefs and Bills and leading right into Cardinals and Cowboys. I mean, that's a heck of a night. But I'll mention the Packers and Bucks game. Obviously, huge game for the Packers, coming off a bye week, need to remain undefeated to keep up with the Seahawks. Home field is going to be even more important this year because you remember they expanded the playoffs this year. So there's now seven teams making the playoffs, and only the one seed will get that bye week, the first week. So getting the one seed is extra important. So the Packers need to keep winning, basically. This will be a tough game. I mean, I know the Bucs are coming off a loss, and, Brady, they were kind of stymied a little bit. But I will say the Bears' defense is much better than Green Bay's. But the Green Bay offense is one of the best in the league right now. I've mentioned it numerous times. What LaFleur and Rodgers have going on is just incredible. Davante Adams should be back. We'll see what happens. I mean, the Packers are slight favorite, which seems right to me. It'll be a good game. And, a couple of years ago when Rodgers and Brady last played, you never thought that they would play again because they play every 4 years unless they played in a Super Bowl. Well, it just so happens now with Tom in Tampa, we get another iteration of Rodgers and Brady playing another matchup, which is great. And maybe they'll get into the playoffs too. So I'll let the other guys touch on some of the other games. I mentioned the Cardinals game, my pick, the Chiefs Bills game. And that's an easy over if I've ever seen one. I mean, I don't see any of those defenses stopping each other. So that should be pretty exciting. I'll let the other guys talk about some of these other matchups. It should be another good schedule.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this. Red Zone is going to be awesome come Sunday afternoon. And I agree with your other point about all these games on different nights. I'm all about it too. I think it's been a lot of fun. And I was actually disappointed that they didn't have that early game, as we talked about with the Patriot game getting postponed beyond Monday. It would have been a fun little late afternoon scenario for us as well. So, Andy, I'll give it to you for your thoughts on the week's action. And before you do that, though, what happened in the Astros game? Because I see they have the lead, but I didn't see what – I looked away from the screen.
I believe it was Springer hit a two-run dong off Glasnow.
Gotcha. Good stuff.
So we need some magic here. Some Tampa magic. Anyway, yeah, all these games got me thinking, like, I kind of miss – we could use a London game this year, but we're not going to get any of those London 6 a.m. West Coast starts. Those are always a handful, a barrel of laughs to at least have the eyes halfway open for the first half of that game, the sound on, like, very low volume. But none of those this year, and maybe we're getting close to Fiddle's, like, Thanksgiving morning game with the Patriots involved. I mean, so many things that were like, there's no more conventional thinking anymore. So yeah, the more games, the weirder times. I mean, we all got to just adjust to it at this point. But yeah, it's on paper, it's a pretty good slate, especially compared to the slates we've had the last two games. I will definitely be into that Tampa Green Bay game. I'll probably fall in the Rodgers trap as much as I love Tom Brady. You know, Rodgers is just that much more crisp. I'm not sure the type of receivers he'll be throwing to just yet, but it didn't really matter the other week before their bye against the Falcons. But it'll be a different animal with Tampa. But Tampa just seems to always self-destruct, be their own worst enemy, as I said ad nauseum on this program. We kind of touched on that, the Rams and the 49ers. Pump that up again. Thanks. Brown Steelers. Now that's a good game. Nance and Romo will be there. I have an aversion to both teams, but you know, I'm definitely going to have a wager on her come Sunday morning. I'm probably going to take your team, probably in a money line. Just, I can see that game coming down to like a 2-point conversion or a missed extra point or a long field goal hitting a crossbar or something like that. I don't know. I think that game could either be like, you know, 10-9 or, you know, 35-34. You really have no clue. I'd probably edge the offense, though, to be 100% fair, right? Unless the weather's really bad. But it seems like Ben and Claypool have found their mojo that was last weekend, the Eagles. But the thing that worries you if you're a Steeler fan is their pass defense was absolutely atrocious, especially on third down, letting Carson Wentz basically do whatever he wanted to. So, you know, we'll see what happens over there. But yeah, I lean Steelers there. Chiefs Bills definitely has potential. I think some of the luster has worn off the Bills after last night. Because if you really want to be objective about it, they got a little lucky against the Rams, so they could have two losses, but they don't. And they only have one. But the Chiefs, that loss aside, you know, to the Raiders, you know, they have offensive firepower. I know the Bills have had the ability to score a bunch of points too, but I don't know. I would lean Chiefs in that game. And yeah, like you guys mentioned, Cardinals Cowboys. That could also be a shootout. I mean, we've seen so many shootouts this year in NFL, so I wouldn't expect anything otherwise. You know, Murray's hard to contain, and, you know, Cliff Kingsbury doesn't really have respect for defense anyway. And, yeah, I'm sure as much as we love to mock Andy Dalton in years past, he's probably going to be chomping at the bit to prove himself. So, yeah, it's a good slate.
And I think what's great about this slate is that every game has the potential to have an unbelievable amount of points, which we've seen most of the year anyway. But certainly you could see it going either way, like you said, especially about Browns Steelers. Like, we saw a game go to overtime one time, and it ended in a tie. So nothing is really a given. But interestingly enough, the Browns only have one win in their entire. This doesn't mean much because the Browns have been terrible most of the last 20 years. But nevertheless, they have only one win at Heinz Field in their entire franchise history since restarting, I guess, back in 1999. It doesn't mean a thing because this team's actually much better than those other teams were. So let's go back to John and let's get your thoughts on this week's action. Oh no, wait, we did John. I'm sorry. Let's go to Parcells and let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, like both those guys said, a lot of juice in those games that you had popped up. The one that I'm really looking forward to is, and just, you know, because I'm an Oklahoma guy, is the Cardinals Cowboys. It's love watching Kyler. Hopefully, he can take advantage of that Cowboys defensive backfield. And throw all over them, and obviously, you know, use his legs and whatnot. You know, the Giants dropped 34 points on them, so I don't see why the Cardinals can't do as well or better. But yeah, so that's the game that I'm really interested in. And but all those games there have juice, so looking forward to all those.
Love it. So with that, we say good day to the and good night to the NFL coverage this week. And let's go ahead and continue our coverage with the NCAA, which, again, was really, really hot. And it started right away with the big noon Saturday game between the Oklahoma Sooners and the Texas Longhorns in the Red River game. It is always a fun rivalry, but this one was wild. I mean, we're going to go back to you, Parcells, because I'm sure you were very close to the situation, being an Oklahoma fan. This wound up being a great game, but it wasn't for a while because Oklahoma had a pretty sizable lead with 4 minutes to go in regulation. The Longhorns rallied bigly to tie the game and force overtime, and from then on, it was just crazy. So let's give it to you for your thoughts of that game and any of the thoughts you had about last week's college action.
Yeah, so So, yeah, definitely a crazy game. So Oklahoma jumps out to an early lead, and then Rattler turns the ball over a couple of times, and Riley benches him, which I thought was actually a pretty good thing. Tanner Mordecai finishes the first half. Rattler goes in, starts the second half again, and he settled down in the second half, and he played awfully well in the second half. Then, as you said, Dave, in the fourth quarter, Oklahoma has a 2-touchdown lead. Texas scores with about 4 minutes left. Oklahoma gets the ball back. And with 2 minutes left, Texas no timeouts. Oklahoma has a 3rd and 9. And Riley throws the ball 3rd and 9 instead of running 40 seconds off the clock and then punting. And that killed them right there. So then Texas grabs the ball and goes downfield. So now Oklahoma's defense, which has always been criticized, and rightly so, has actually been, I don't want to say fairly decent, but better this year. But in their two losses previously, they got absolutely gashed in the fourth quarter. Couldn't stop anyone. Totally different ball game than the first three quarters of those games. So the same thing happens in the fourth quarter here. And Erlinger does Erlinger stuff. Guy rushed for over 100 yards and ties the game. And as you said, overtime was crazy. Third overtime, Oklahoma blocks a field goal. They go down. Gabe Berkich misses his field goal. Tie game. Fourth overtime, Rattler hits Drake Stoops, Bob Stoops' son. Convert the two-point conversion. Texas gets the ball. Erlinger throws a pick to Trey Brown. Game over. Oklahoma wins. But it was as crazy a game, probably obviously the craziest Red River rivalry game that there's been. But obviously thrilled that they won.
It was thrilling, certainly. It was a thrilling day all told, and it was a lot of fun. So thanks for the recap on that, Parcells. Let's go to the rest of the panel, and we'll start with John. Let's get your recap of last week's action.
Yeah, that game was crazy. As someone who made a small wager on Texas +7.5 live, that was not a fun way to end the game. That was basically the only way that you could lose that bet, +7.5 live, was being the fourth overtime with a scenario where Oklahoma gets a touchdown and a 2-point conversion, and then Texas fails to answer. And, they obviously had a turnover. They could have been stopped on downs too, but a brutal way to lose that bet. But overall, I thought Herman missed a number of chances to go for two and win the game. You had the momentum right there, like plenty of times. I thought at the end of the game, when they made the huge comeback, that it was the perfect chance to go for two. And one of the overtimes as well, you could just tell it was just going to keep going back and forth. And I just thought he should have gone for two there. Maybe I was jaded because I had that bet, but I just think it was a mistake to keep kicking extra points. And you clearly could not stop Oklahoma at that point. I just didn't see why he didn't go for two. Both teams really, it was an exciting game, but I don't think both teams in terms of the national landscape are really doing anything. Especially Texas now, both have two losses, but definitely an entertaining game, and it delivers every year. So it definitely did not disappoint. As for some of the other games that were going on, my pick of Virginia Tech, that's the risk you get these days with the COVID situation. 15 guys ruled out right before the game, and they gave up 56 points to North Carolina. They said all week, the coach said that Hendon Hooker was going to play. And then, of course, he plays like four snaps in the game. And, there was a point in the game where they made a decent comeback, and you thought maybe they could get a cover, but they just couldn't. They were just so depleted on defense that they just could not stop North Carolina at all. And you see, it's just some crazy games in the SEC. You have them up on the screen there. Just Bama and Ole Miss was just like an arena football game. It just was, going touchdown for touchdown both ways. And, Bama just too much firepower at the end. But Ole Miss, that team can score. Every game of theirs this year is going to be like that. It's just going to be a crazy, just wild shootout, basically. Bama survives. And obviously the huge news now with Saban being COVID positive for Saturday, is he going to coach? We'll get into that after, but that's crazy. Tennessee got out ahead on Georgia and then just really did nothing after the first quarter, and Georgia slowly came back, got some turnovers in the second half, and just won going away. You know, the Auburn-Arkansas game where Bo Nix just makes a stupid play at the end of the game. He fumbles the snap going to spike it, and then he, like, does a backwards – he like spiked the ball down, but it was backwards. It really should have been a fumble, and maybe Arkansas's ball if they recovered it, but they blew it dead, so they let it go, and Auburn gets the game-winning field goal. I mean, they're not very impressive, but Arkansas, for a team that had lost like 30 SEC games in a row or something ridiculous like that, finally showing a little life under their new coaching staff. And then Florida gets upset at Texas A&M. You know, their offense was good as expected, but their defense was very, very poor. And then Dan Mullen after the game, like, what a clown this guy is. He's like, yeah, well, we, you know, the crowd being there was a major factor. We need to pack the swamp for next week. We need to have 90,000 people in the swamp. Well, guess what, Dan? Your game just got postponed because you have 25 kids on your team have COVID. So maybe that's not the best idea right now. It's just like, it was just such a ridiculous comment because, number one, the stadium is not even – the A&M stadium was not even half filled. And secondly – bro, you're paid to coach in the SEC on the road. Like, this crowd not going to be a factor? Like, there's half the crowd. Like, you're usually coaching in front of 100,000 people. Like, you're to use that as an excuse? Like, that was just so weak, in my opinion. But in any event, that was a bad loss for them. But I got, you know what? One loss this year probably isn't going to kill you. Two, you know, now you're getting somewhere. But who knows now with the schedule, because now them and LSU aren't playing. I mean, you're starting to get to the situation where there's not many more like weeks to make up. Like, I don't know if they'll keep pushing the SEC title back to get more games in. I don't know. We'll see. But those are kind of the big games of the weekend. You know, Clemson just destroyed Miami. That wasn't even – not even close. I mean, it was more lopsided than the score even looked. Yeah, and other than that, I mean, no other – I can mention some, like, gambling situations, but no one wants to hear about that in some of these lower games. So, yeah, it was an interesting weekend. And, you know, it's good to see these top 10 and 15 matchups, and we'll get even more of that with the Big Ten starting up next week. So slowly but surely, we're getting there to a full slate of college football.
It is good to see, John, and it was good to see some of the powers back doing powerful things. Bama taking care of Georgia easily, though now a very odd situation with Saban unable to coach this upcoming game on Saturday. I imagine there's going to be some contact tracing involved, and assuming that no players are infected at the same time, they'll probably just play the game as normal. But without him coaching, it's going to be odd. Yeah, so we will see. What were we just getting into? Oh yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the point about the comments as far as getting the stadium packed. I saw that on Twitter. I found that I was very annoyed by that comment. I think it's just ridiculous. It just seems like people don't care about the safety of people at all. It was just really getting on my nerves after a while. And I've heard similar sentiments as far as the Saints trying to move their games to Baton Rouge so they can get fans in the stadium. And like, it's all well and good, but, you know, have a little consideration for the people in your community, too. That's kind of my only comment on that. Anyway, there certainly was a lot going on. Bama, by the way, just like you said, it was an arena football game. It was a crazy game. What was it? I think the game it was going back and forth with Ole Miss. I'm not sure what I was getting into earlier when I said that. Never mind. Let's go to Andy in Seattle. Let's get your thoughts on last week's college action.
Yeah, I just got a text from – I'm on a text thread with Boxman and SJR, and they say we're all full of shit. But I'm just kidding. Open it up. They want the swamp back. 90K. I'm just messing around. But
open them up.
Yeah. I got a couple rants here with the Texas Oklahoma game. I mean, Texas had covered against Oklahoma for like 7 in a row, largely part because Oklahoma had been heavy favorites in a lot of these games. But man, Tom Herman. The adage, like John likes to do, the, you know, take Kingsbury as a underdog, bet against Kingsbury as a favorite. It's kind of take Tom Herman as an underdog, bet against Tom Herman when he's a favorite. I applied that, and goodness gracious, it's almost like, you remember last year against LSU when Texas, they went for it like in the first quarter, like two times in a row, fourth and goal rather than get the field goals, and they didn't get anything. And they're like, why would Herman leave points on the board? Well, like, you need a bunch of points to beat LSU last year. He basically did the opposite last week against Oklahoma, because I think there's at least three instances, like on fourth and one from like their own 45-yard line to midfield, where he elected to punt. And in a twist of fate, like Oklahoma, they got like a block punt. Just some bad special teams by Texas gave Oklahoma a good advantage in that game. And as I was just texting in misery, this like, hey, Herman, you don't have as much talent as Oklahoma, so you might just want to risk it, you know, no risk it, no biscuit. Just go for two, like John said, go for two one of those times. I was ready to do errands, and like the game was over, 31-16 or whatever it was, and then they scored, went overtime. Overtime was like an hour, so you know, all about me. Just and then, you know, late lunch to that game, and you know, you just delayed the inevitable by not going it for two. But Oklahoma definitely has more talent, and Texas, I don't know, Ellinger seems to have regressed, or he's just not as confident as he was last year, or he lacks the weapons. I don't know. I don't know the Texas personnel. I just like to, you know, bet on or against Herman from time to time. And I do like Ellinger, but very entertaining game, high scoring. It's exactly what you would expect a Red River shootout. Had juice. Gus Johnson was good job out of him. Bama, Ole Miss, that was a track meet. It feels like with Alabama, whenever they get exposed, when, like, you know something's amiss when their defense is yelling at each other. Like in the Clemson National Championship games, you got the cornerbacks pointing fingers at the safety and the linebackers pointing fingers at the lineman. And, like, there's no cohesion, and they're frustrated. You see it in the Auburn game. You can get on Alabama. You push Alabama's buttons when you do, like, the trickery. Remember the Auburn game around Thanksgiving when it looked like they were going to punt, or they were going to go for it, but the punter was on the sideline, and Alabama got called for too many men on the field. And then the other thing is when you run hurry up, because when you play Alabama, the offenses aren't in, like, they don't want to win in a track meet. They kind of want to play methodically against Alabama. But if you have the personnel, and obviously what's-his-face Kiffin does, clearly, that quarterback's really good. You play fast, and their defense doesn't have time for whatever reason. Like, they're just not used to it. And it showed dearly. Like, they were a play behind. And obviously Kiffin didn't have much faith in his defense either. And it was just a weird, high-scoring, flying game. Like, Alabama, they give up a lot of points in a lot of these games. They're starting to creep up now. Like, Auburn game last year, Clemson National Championship, this game. So, yeah, it's not vintage Alabama defense. Their offense is sick, but, yeah, it was an entertaining game. It was a basketball score, basically. Auburn, Arkansas, as John said, Auburn got lucky, so maybe karma will flip the switch at some point. And it was brutal weather. It was like remnants of the Hurricane Delta, so not a lot of offense as you would expect. But, yeah, Arkansas definitely got screwed there. And then Clemson, another boring game for Herbstreit and Fowler. My pick was Miami Funhouse there. Dabo Swinney, his aw shucks, we're just this little team. His start, that act has worn thin now, Dabo. Gosh, but they're really good. And that Clemson Notre Dame game should be juicy. A little down on Notre Dame. They didn't cover the 20-point spread yesterday or on Saturday. They let FSU hang around. They did try to cover at the very end, but they had it the goal line, and they didn't get it in. I was a little bitter. You know, too much offense allowed by Florida. You know, too much offense for Florida State for some reason. Yeah, Florida, Texas A&M, great offense by Florida. Just a trash defense. They're, you know, Gainesville Twitter wants their defensive coordinator, like, fired. They were good last year, though, so I don't know. Maybe it's a lack of preparation. And, yeah, I echo the thoughts of the podcast. You know, Mullen just came across as his comments did not age well over the last couple of days. And then, I'm not going to waste my breath with Mississippi State and Mike Leach. Go to hell. And then
2 points, Andy. Jeez.
Yeah, 2 points against the Kentucky. Oh, KJ Costello must have been on some crazy painkillers. Oh my goodness, Lord, he had dead arm. Like the backup was better, but whatever. And then yeah, if we touched last week, you know, we were waiting for BYU to kind of have a game where they kind of, you know, what's the phrase, spin their own wheels, and they did. So. You know, we'll see what happens this week against Houston. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we make our picks. But, yeah, maybe the bloom will be off the BYU rose. And, yeah, Tennessee's exactly who we thought they were. You know, they had a great first half. And then in the second half, you know, Georgia was like, okay, let's put this team to pasture. And that's what they did. So, yeah, it was a entertaining week, very SEC, Big 12-centric as expected. But these other conferences are going to start right around the corner.
Yep, and Florida State continues to not be able to get out of their own way. Unfortunately for all of us, they're going to be the featured game again on the Herb Street Fowler game on ABC this weekend. So those poor guys can't catch a break with these matchups. I mean, it's just too much ACC. So I'll show you what the featured games are coming up on the schedule. That's it. Just one game. And I don't even know. I assume it's going to get played. Certainly Saban won't coach, but I think they will play the game. Georgia-Alabama, this should be a good matchup. I think the game I was referring to earlier that I was trying to remember was the Tennessee-Georgia game. And yeah, indeed, Tennessee are who we thought they were. Ron was all over that. He offered that as a bonus pick. He loved Georgia to cover 12.5, and they did at least that much in the second half of that game. So very good. So there's your feature game. Really only one game. Next we go to, let's just go right to the picks. Oh yeah, and these were postponed. Again, LSU Florida, as John talked about, the 22 people infected, that's almost the whole team. It's crazy. So they are postponed indefinitely. Oklahoma State and Baylor are postponed indefinitely, and Vanderbilt and Missouri are postponed indefinitely. So let's not waste any more time. Let's go to the picks. And we start with Ron's pick from the world of college football. All right, here we go. Whoa! Here we go. Sorry. Okay, so the pick for Ron in New Jersey for week number 7 in college football is NC State giving 4.5 versus Duke. Duke beat Syracuse last week. NC State, I don't know what they did, but they're at home. It seems like a solid pick. So good luck to Ron as he goes NC State minus 4.5. All right. So now for my pick. Very quick. I was going to go Alabama, but with this whole thing going on with Nick Saban, I'm pivoting right out of it. We'll go to the pick I had before a few days ago. We are going to take Liberty giving 3.5 at Syracuse. And to me, what I've seen from Hugh Freeze and his recruiting is a very athletic team. And I feel like over the last 3 weeks, they have shown their athletic superiority over a lot of teams. Then the most recent example was against Louisiana Monroe. Syracuse certainly has been spunky, I guess. But their defense continues to be shitty. And I can't really see that working out. DeVito is a very, very sporadic quarterback. I think he's prone to making mistakes. So I just can't. Even at the Dome, I really think Liberty's just going to pound these guys. So Liberty minus 3.5 for Dave's Week 7 college pick. And all right, on to John. And let's get your Week number 7 college football pick.
All right, thanks, Dave. Yeah, lots of options this week. Too many, honestly, that I like. But so we'll settle on a pure game for you. I'm going to take Louisiana Tech. Plus 13.5 against Marshall. Marshall's lines are starting to get inflated now, just like BYU. You know, they blew out Eastern Kentucky the first week. Doesn't mean anything to me. They played a really good game against Appalachian State this second game. They won 17-7, and then they just blew out Western Kentucky 38-7. But I just don't think they're like a big margin kind of team. I'm sorry, they won 38-14. And if you look at the box score of that game, the yards were pretty much even, and they benefited from 3 turnovers. The spread here is 14 with an over-under of 51, which just tells you there's not going to be that much scoring. And I just think La Tech is a pretty well-coached team, and I just think this line is very much inflated off of those 3 games, and I don't think Marshall is quite that good to be giving 2 touchdowns on the road. So we're going to go La Tech plus 13.5 to keep this one close against Marshall.
Thank you, John. Good luck. And next up, Andy in Seattle, let's get your college pick.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'm gonna take Houston getting 4.5 from the BYU Cougars. Hey, Mike, do the BYU Cougars and the Houston? No, it's Cougar versus Cougar. And yeah, like we alluded to, like we've gotten burnt by BYU the first 3 weeks of the year betting against them, and those games weren't even close. And then last week they didn't cover. I didn't see the game. I think it was the score was like 27-20. And I know Houston, I mean, they could be very Mongo with Dana Holgorsen. And I bet against them against Tulane last Thursday. And in the first half, it was like, it looked like it was the right play because Houston was like, they were throwing interceptions, they were fumbling. Tulane was up like 21-7. And then the second half, Tulane just did nothing. And Houston showed their prolific offense. You know, it was only their first game last week because their first four games were postponed for COVID-related situations. So, yeah, I'm ready to bet against BYU again this year. We can only go up betting against them. And, yeah, I think Houston will have enough firepower. And I don't know what to think about this BYU team. But, yeah, let's bet against them. Hopefully we come up on the right side of the ledger here. Houston getting 4.5 from BYU. A week 7 college.
All right, thanks, Andy. Now let's go to our guest picker. Once again, here's Parcells falling out with his college pick.
Thanks, Dave. So with Oklahoma on bye this week, I don't know nearly as much as all you guys do when it comes to all these other schools. So I'm scrambling to try to find a matchup that's, where something jumped out at me. And just scrolling through earlier, seeing Notre Dame hosting Louisville, 3-0 Notre Dame, 1-3 Louisville, Notre Dame giving 17 at home, that just jumped out at me. So I'm going Notre Dame minus 17. If that's a spread I saw. If you have something different, I'll stick with Notre Dame. But that's my pick for week 7.
All right, cool. I think that's what I saw too. So I'll confirm in just a second here. I'm just going to look it up here. I always have the point spreads on the screen. And actually, yes, it says 16.5. I'll even give you the extra half point. So minus 16.5.
Even better.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, okay, good luck. Dave. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. I think, what happened to Notre Dame last week? I don't even remember. It's so boring. But very good. So thanks again, everybody. Good luck to the picks, everyone. I think this will be a very interesting week at college. Well, I'm not going to necessarily say that there's going to be a marquee game. There's going to be a lot of big games like there were a week ago, but there could be juice. You just never know. We talked about that. Sometimes it can be sneaky good. So let's go to everybody and let's get some final thoughts. And to start that off, I think we can begin with John in Connecticut. Let's get your final thoughts on the week of football.
Yeah, it should be another great weekend of games. The Bama Georgia game is what we'll be all watching this week in terms of like a marquee game on Saturday night. We'll see how this affects with Saban obviously not being there. I mean, I don't know if he can't like zoom in to call plays or manage the game. So he's probably going to be, I'm sure he's going to like at halftime, he'll call in and make adjustments, but that'll be definitely an interesting scenario to watch. The lines dropped a couple of points since that news. I think it was 6.5, now it's 4. So that just goes to show you what he means to the spread. And that's really the only like really great college game. Obviously, I'll be following the rest of it for various scenarios. Although I will say, UMass making their season debut on Saturday at Georgia Southern, getting 31.5. I am here for that game. I don't know. They're like the COVID fill-in. That's the only game they've scheduled. I don't know who else they're playing. I don't know if they're going to be playing Army. I don't know if they're going to be playing like BYU. We'll see the announcement. But it just bothers me. Like, can we get like a UConn-UMass Thanksgiving game at this point? Like, why can't we have at least get one UConn game? I know they suck, but like, come on, just give me one game this year. It's just kind of bothering me. All these UMass is playing. Like, come on, we can play a game this year. I digress.
Parcells, you're a UConn guy too. I mean, any other added flavors to that topic?
None. I'm with John on that. You know, now that they're independent, let's get a UMass game. A lot of juice around here for that. People will be fired up.
I'm with it. I think they should make that happen. Absolutely. Okay. We'll stay with you. Let's get to what. Any final thoughts for you, from your side, Parcells?
No, nothing on college. Like John said, the Georgia Alabama game. That's got to pique your interest. You know, on the pro side, all those games that you popped up have juice. So a lot of good stuff going on this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll swing it to Andy for the last word.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to that Georgia-Alabama game. I don't know. It's funny. I saw the quarterback. Like I mentioned last week, I thought JT Daniels was going to be the quarterback for Georgia, but it's some guy named Bennett the Fourth. He's got the Roman numeral on the back of the Bennett the Fourth. Like, you can't make it up. Anyway, I digress. But I just wanted to say a little gambling tale here. I don't have FanDuel. I bet with a lot of my friends, but then I do have a bookie, his website. You know, it's a website. And there's if you're up anywhere from $1 to $199, it carries over. You don't get paid. And if you are down $1 to $199, you don't have to pay the bookie. So it's a -$200 variance on Monday morning. And Sunday morning, we were on pace to pay the bookie. And we started with betting on Nadal French Open, and we were just chasing everything, you know, Giants for – anyway, all this to say, we took a prop, DK Metcalf, over 4.5 receptions and over 78.5 yards receiving. Seattle, Seahawk, LA Laker, Moneyline Parlay. We had a lot going out there. So all this to say, that fourth down play, Russell Wilson to DK Metcalf, that didn't – solve anything. All it did was give it was Metcalf's fourth catch, and it got him to 72 yards, and then he ended up getting two more catches, including obviously the game winner. So it's just gambling's crazy, you know. That one play, you know, Andy didn't have to pay the bookie for
nice.
It just that one play, and it just goes to like, god damn it, Seattle. Like, I know they had taken them to cover 6.5 with a dumb bet, obviously. But the money line, we had to really touch cloth there. And like we said at the beginning of the podcast, like every game they play just seems to just come down to the wire. But I think, yeah, DK Metcalf, he's got good juju.
He's fun to watch. Well, guys, this has been fun. And thanks again, Parcells, for joining us for the guest spot and everything.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
You got it. All the best. Enjoy the rest of the LCS. Really quickly, I guess the last thing I'll ask, who do you guys predict to win the respective league championships the rest of the way? Parcells, you got a meter on that?
I think obviously have to go Tampa here because they're up 3-0. Might lose this one, but I think they're in good shape. I still don't think the Dodgers are out of it. I mean, down 2-1, you know, they win tomorrow. It's, you know, everything's even. So I think it's going to be a Tampa Dodgers World Series.
And well, I have some thoughts on that potential matchup if we get there, but I agree with your point, even though I was very despondent last night on Twitter, as you saw. But
yeah,
but you got Kershaw going tomorrow. The Braves generally don't hit lefties very well to begin with. I mean, the whole season, they really have not had a very high WRC+. And if you look at it individually, they only have like two guys in that whole lineup that can hit consistently against left-handed pitchers. So I think it's a good opportunity for the Dodgers. We'll see if they can take advantage of it and if Kershaw can do his thing. So, Andy, same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Team Tampa tonight. Team Tampa games 1-3, too. So go Tampa, go 1-3. But I think the Dodgers have definitely life. I know, like, tomorrow is, like, we don't want to have any sort of, like, hyperbole here. But – or, you know, whatever, like a recency bias, but like it's big start for Kershaw in terms of his narrative, like LOL playoff Kershaw. It's big. It's like he could either give big finger to his haters or throw gas onto, you know, just bolster his haters' arguments too. That's a big game for him tomorrow. Like he don't have to do anything, but like he needs to go deep, and he needs to, you know, two runs or less. No back to back home run situations.
Oh man, we saw that. I mean, seriously, that it just brought back memories when I saw that last week. You know. So thanks for that. John, anything on baseball or you know?
I have a pending series parlay with the Rays and Dodgers, so we're going to keep rooting for that. So nice. That's what I hope it ends up with.
Cool. I can root for that too. Guys, thanks again. Enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend, and we'll catch you guys soon. Thanks again. Take care, everybody.
All right, peace. Good luck, everyone.
Later. See you guys. Good luck, everybody.
See you guys.
Good luck. Thanks, everyone. And that's our program tonight. Thanks again. By ourselves, and we hope you enjoyed this program. It has been a lot of fun, and thank you again for your continued loyalty to this enterprise. You can find us on the web at ditcow.com, on Twitter at ditcow, on facebook.com/ditcow, and wherever you get your podcasts. Certainly we would recommend going to Apple Podcasts to get the latest there. Have a wonderful time. Enjoy the rest of this LCS round. And, you know, for me, of course, I'm hoping the Dodgers get through. But if they don't, you know, power to the Braves. I mean, that's a great team, too. So thanks again. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening with the contest. And I send our best wishes to Ron in New Jersey as well. We will see you next time.